I'm Tom Strachan from Fantasy Sanctuary. Me and Mags, we're about to break down a rookie mock draft. This is the Dynasty Hot Seat. Let's get into it.
Yes, hello everybody and welcome back once again to the Dynasty Hot Seat, the only Dynasty show out there that is a certified inferno. And today we've got one of my favorite guests back on the show, the man, the myth, the legend, Tom Strachan. You can find him over on X at NFL underscore T Strach, one half of the amazing Fantasy Sanctuary. Tom, great to see you again, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, well, it's always a pleasure jumping on with you, Mags. I've lost count of how many times we've been on each of the shows at this point, but yeah, I mean, it's that nice little lull between the NFL combine and before the draft where things start falling into place. We've got the teams falling into place now with post free agency, and now it's just that time to be a go back and look at your takes, make sure that you feel confident in what you feel, and just look forward to the draft. So yeah, it's all good.
Do you know what time this is as well? I always find, Tom, this is silly season. This is where people start poking holes in players that don't need to be poked. And just we're seeing weird stories and some of the most bizarre, like, hot takes out there, right? Where it's like, Marvin Harrison Jr. is my wide receiver 5. It's like, I don't want to hear that from anybody. So that's the kind of space we're in right now, isn't it?
Yeah, draft fatigue season has absolutely kicked in and second-guessing yourself time, but you know what? I think, like usual, by the time we actually get to the draft, a lot of the stuff is going to be how we kind of expected it a month ago.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on. So we will be getting right into that draft very, very soon. But of course, before that, hey, first of all, thank you very much. We just hit a milestone over here in the Dynasty Hot Seat. 500 of you lucky, lucky people have hit that subscribe button. Thank you very much to everybody. If you're one of those people that haven't, I guess about like 80% of you haven't. Come on, let's get going. Let's keep hitting that subscribe button and keep pumping up to the magic 1,000 mark. Hey, while you're at it, head over to the Fantasy Sanctuary. They're chasing down that 2,000. So make sure you go and hit the subscribe over there already if you haven't. So, Tom, we're going to jump in. We're going to do a mock draft. But before that, we're going to sort of take a broad approach about this 2024 class. Anything you've noticed about this class in particular? Anything that stands out for you?
This is a really fun class. I think, obviously, the one thing that people have been saying is there's no clear standout running back in the way there was Bijan Robinson and Breece Hall. Yeah. But there's definitely functional running backs, and there's still running backs, and there's teams who need running backs. So it feels like there's going to be value there. The wide receivers aren't like last year's, where it was lots of smaller wide receivers, and you were having to work out, okay, are they going to fit in this scheme or not? So now we've got some prototypical guys as well as some of the smaller guys. And it just feels like you can really choose your poison when it comes to wide receivers. And then quarterbacks, I mean, this is the best quarterback class that we've had in several years. Yeah. And on paper, it looks like it's going to provide us a lot of good fantasy options. So I think if you went all in a league and you have no 2024 picks, I know I've got a couple where I don't. I'm looking at rookie first rounds and stuff like that, and I'm wishing that I still had a couple of those picks back, because it feels like a year where you're going to add some really good depth to your roster.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think this is a really, really nice class, and I think when all is said and done, people are going to look back at this class and go, that was pretty good, kind of like the 2020 class. In fact, we've been quite lucky the last couple of years, maybe 2022 aside. The last 5 years been pretty solid, and I don't think this is any exception. And we're going to prove it right now, because we're going to get right into this mock draft. It is super flex. It is non-tight end premium. We're going to go blast through round number one. We're going to do something a little bit different at round two as well, which I'm excited for, Tom. But we're going to start off with the 1-1. Who are you taking first overall?
Yeah, so it's got to be Caleb Williams. I know people are probably a little bit bored of hearing about it, but I'm just glad that Justin Fields has been traded away now. We can stop that kind of nonsense about will they keep Fields. And really, it was always a complete flawed argument. Justin Fields is a good player, but he's not an excellent player, and there's no reason why you should want a player on your roster if they can't, you know, if you're going to win despite them rather than because of them. And that's where Justin Fields was. He was going to become very expensive very quickly. And now you get a chance to add Caleb Williams, who's such a good throw of the ball. You know, his ability to operate out of structure is excellent. And the Bears have set him up in a way that Justin Fields wasn't set up for success. This team has a really good defense. So, you know, they're not just going to be putting the offense back on the field constantly. But then they've added Keenan Allen, DeAndre Swift, Gerald Everett. They already had DJ Moore and Cole Kmet. Meanwhile, you go back and you look, and Justin Fields had like Darnell Mooney getting 140 targets in year one, Allen Robinson and Marquise Goodwin. So with the playmaking that Caleb Williams has, I think it's going to be much easier for him to not have to rely on playing out of structure so much as he did in college. And while everybody wants to compare him to like Patrick Mahomes, I think that in reality, the more apt comparisons I see are kind of like Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence. And if he lives up to any of those players, then you'd be very happy and feel like you got a return on investment here.
Here's an interesting question, right? Caleb Williams, obviously, we've talked loads about Caleb Williams as a prospect. What does this do to DJ Moore's fantasy value? Does that go up with the arrival of Caleb Williams? Does it stay the same, or does it go down?
Well, I think the biggest problem for DJ Moore is the Keenan Allen acquisition, because Keenan Allen is such a target hog. You know, we're coming off a year where he led the league in targets per game played, and he just earns them at such a high clip. He's such a quarterback-friendly player. I'm not saying DJ Moore isn't, but I think Keenan Allen at his age is going to be positioned in the slot more often, and DJ Moore is going to be positioned more downfield. So I don't think that it's a horrendous thing for DJ Moore's value at all. I think that in best ball, there it's a stack, which if I could get all three of them, I'll be quite happy with that. Yeah. But I think what we'll see out of DJ Moore is possibly just a bit more consistency. You know, with Justin Fields, there was always an element of boom bust with it. So hopefully this just is a new era of Bears offense and things are a bit smoother.
Yeah, I'm excited by this. There's a lot of good weapons, like even like Cole Kmet. Cole Kmet's a really, really solid tight end in there. So he's got a lot of weapons to kind of use there at the Bears. So you're right, a new era for them for sure with Caleb Williams at the helm. So who's following Caleb there at pick number two?
So this is where I'm going to get a bit different from the consensus, and we're going to go with Drake May. And we can talk about Jaden Daniels when we get to him. But yeah, for me, I'm not overthinking Drake May. He's a 6'4", 223-pound quarterback. He's got touch. He's got accuracy. He rushed for almost 1,500 yards and 16 touchdowns over his last 2 years in college. And while he's not a pure dual threat quarterback, he averaged 0.85 scramble yards per drop back in college, which was more than Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Andrew Luck. And he still had a big-time deep throw rate of 5.7%, which is kind of similar range to a lot of first-round quarterbacks. Like, that's above average. And when I see him, I just feel like he's kind of like a Josh Allen light. If he goes to Washington at pick two overall, I'll be really excited. I think that's a scheme and going to be an offense which could really play up to his strengths. And it just comes down to me as well. I look at some of the people who are in on Drake May. There's a lot of people I respect who feel very in on Drake May, and it just gives me more conviction in what I feel about him. And yeah, I think he's going to be a very good NFL quarterback for a long time.
Yeah, I think you mentioned before we brought the draft, you talked about sort of this fatigue that can set in place for some of these players. Drake May seems to be the victim of that, because he's sliding down boards for no real reason, right? This is where he was. And the same thing happened to CJ Stroud last year, if you remember, just started sliding down boards because people were like, oh, I've looked at him forever and someone else is the new hotness. Drake May is still really, really good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's like people see these players, these quarterbacks, where there's a perceived amount of, okay, do they have the ceiling? And it's all, okay, well, we want the player with the ceiling. And CJ Stroud, like you said, did nothing wrong apart from the S2 test, which proved to be a pile of rubbish. But yeah. Drake May, yeah, I think if Drake May was coming from a bigger school than UNC, then this wouldn't even be a question.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on. Drake May is someone who, and it's almost like people are saying, oh, well, he's going to, there must be a bust in here. It's like, there's a chance this could be like that 2020 class when you get Joe Burrow, you get Tua, you get Jalen Hurts, you get, I mean, who would have thought Jordan Love, right? You get him. Like, yeah. It could be like that where all these guys are just really, really good and you don't have to think about ceiling or floor. They're all really good prospects. There is a chance of that happening, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely spot on. So I love Drake May there too. That's where he was, you know, not that long ago. So yeah, I don't think it's too outside the box. They could be picking Drake May too there. So who's following up then at pick number three?
Pick number three, it's first wide receiver, Marvin Harrison Jr. I mean, we talked about it before that this wide receiver class, it's fun and it is prototypical in the way that you've got these big bodied wide receivers. After looking at Zay Flowers and Jackson Smith and Jigba and Jordan Addison, all these slightly smaller wide receivers last year, to see a guy who's 6'3", 209 pounds, I think that is what we've been craving for, one of these true old-school type wide receivers. And people are getting upset about the fact that he's not done any testing. But go and watch the tape. Marvin Harrison ran a 22.2-mile-per-hour route last year during college. That would have been the second-fastest ball carrier rate of any player in the NFL last year. He is fast, and he can do it all when he's on the field. You know, 1,200 yards, 14 touchdowns in back-to-back seasons. And it really just comes down to where is he going? I think he's a perfect fit for the Cardinals. You look at what Kyler Murray does and how he plays and how he plays outside of structure and can make magic happen. But it does sound like the Cardinals are perhaps keener on moving back, which makes sense when you consider where their front office has come from, the regimes they've been in before being in Arizona. So, yeah, I don't really care too much about the landing spot. I'm very intrigued where it is going to be. But in best ball, it's going to be a harder click for me because he's currently going at pick 18, which that feels like it's going to be quite a tough route to pay off for in year one for a rookie.
Yeah, just because it is that rookie year. And obviously, these rookies have been coming in and producing really early as of late, but I just feel like Marvin Harrison is not your boom bust type player either. I feel like he's going to be super steady, super reliable. I don't think he's going to be someone that's going to come in and be someone that's like a Tyreek Hill where you're like wide receiver one overall, like, or Justin Jefferson. I think he's just someone that's going to be really, really solid. More like a kid, obviously very different players, but more like your Amon-Ra St. Brown, who you can just super like trust and put in and know that he's going to do the goods for you every week.
No, I'd sign up for that right now.
Yeah. Absolutely, we're needing that consistency. So important. So Marvin Harrison Jr. definitely going to get you that. So who's following up Harrison Jr. at pick number four?
So this is Jaden Daniels, and yep. I don't think there's a more dangerous pick in round one than Jaden Daniels, particularly when you're talking about in the front half of a draft. And this isn't normally how I approach dual threats. Like Trey Lance was somebody I was very high on. Justin Fields, I was quite high on in his rookie year as well. Like the difference that these guys can give you with their feet is undeniable. And we saw it from Anthony Richardson last year. In the games he completed, he was what, like a top three quarterback in all of them. But Jaden Daniels, you know, he's 6'4", but he's very slim. You know, he's listed at 210 pounds and he's absolutely no way near that. But the big problem I have with him is he has no idea how to take a hit, how to get tackled. You watch Lamar Jackson, and when he gets tackled, he's normally got his feet slightly off the ground when he gets tackled because he knows that if his legs are planted, it's bad. You watch Jalen Hurts is quite good at it, but Jalen Hurts is quite stocky as well. But Jaden Daniels, it's like Anthony Richardson just completely gung-ho. Last week, I made a cut-up of all the tackles where Jaden Daniels was just getting trucked by linebacker after linebacker, defensive end after defensive end. And there's more. Like, I could have easily put more cuts into there because there are so many examples of it. And when I want a quarterback in round one of a Superflex draft, I don't want to go on YouTube, start typing in Jaden Daniels, and the autocomplete is getting tackled or getting big hits. So I really worry about his ability to stay on the field. When we saw Anthony Richardson, who's sort of 40, 50 pounds heavier than him, not even last for six games. So that combined with the fact that if he ends up at New England, he's going to be throwing to some horrible wide receivers, when last year a big part of what he was doing was throwing to Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. So while he does throw with really good timing and accuracy, I'm not sure what that's going to look like if he's not in an ideal situation. So for me, I think there's more of a chance that in redraft or best ball, I would be happy taking Jaden Daniels this year. And then if I need to trade from in Dynasty, I will, but I can't see myself taking very much of him in rookie drafts.
He's the most interesting prospect for me, just because like the range of outcomes for him is just gigantic, even akin to, we kind of mentioned Justin Fields earlier. Like this time last year, I said on the Fantasy Wildcard shows, like Justin Fields is either, like he could either be quarterback number one overall for Dynasty or everybody's favorite backup. And I feel like Jaden Daniels is in the same kind of category here, because he could end up being this monster, the same guy that was, you know, he was third in rushing in the SEC this year, which is bonkers, especially considering you get negative points for taking a sack as well. Like, it's just crazy.
It's great. I mean, and I possibly come off too negative about him because I think he is going to be electric and he is going to be fun.
Yeah.
But for me, I think when I look at these picks, and you know, I don't just play Dynasty. I play a lot of best ball. I play a lot of DFS. And there's ways for me that I can get my Jaden Daniels exposure if I want to and if I need to, rather than hedging a pick where I need to sort out a roster on a quarterback like Jaden Daniels.
Yeah. The last thing on Jaden Daniels, one of my friends texted me. He said he needed some sort of trade advice. He's playing in a one quarterback league. I don't play in a lot of those, but I almost think in a one QB league, it's almost worth taking Jaden Daniels as your first quarterback off the board. Is that crazy?
No, I don't think it's crazy at all. It's something we've talked about in our Fantasy Sanctuary Discord a bit, that Jaden Daniels will give you that kind of ceiling that you need in a one QB league. Having a safe floor there just really isn't something that you need. So yeah, I'm definitely on board with that.
Yeah, fantastic. So Jaden Daniels locked in at pick number four. Who's following up at pick five, Tom?
Let's go Malik Nabers. I think, you know, we're at that point in the draft season where people are saying, is Malik Nabers the wide receiver one overall? I know Rich, my co-host on the Sanctuary, his rookie model has Malik Nabers absolutely right there with Marvin Harrison. And I think that we will see, you know, there'll be some leagues where people do feel more drawn to Malik Nabers. I'm kind of okay playing it with the consensus, though. I think when you look at what Marvin Harrison did over the course of his college career, there's a little bit more production there. You know, Malik Nabers only really truly broke out in 2023 with 1,500 yards, 14 touchdowns. Before that, he'd been at around about 1,000 yards. And yes, he's had competition at LSU and stuff, but I don't know. I'm completely fine. I'm really excited by him. I think he's such a dynamic player when he's got the ball in his hands. He's really going to be the kind of player that if you get him at 105, you're going to be very happy. And it's the kind of value that you just didn't get a wide receiver at this point in the draft last year.
This is the best player at 105 I can remember for a while. Like, he is really, really, really long. In most of these classes, he would have been that wide receiver one, you know, in the class. So he's really electric, like you mentioned, like really good with the ball in his hands. I just think he's just great to watch. For me, Tom, I don't know if you're in the same boat. For me, it's Marvin Harrison for wide receivers. Marvin Harrison is in a tier of his own. Then Malik Nabers is in a tier of his own. And then Romo Dunze after is also in a tier of his own, because I would never take any one of those guys over the other.
So, yeah, I think I could maybe flip Nabers and Odunze, depending on where they go in the draft, if there was one which was a really good situation. So I think I was reading the Athletic Beat Report mock draft today, and in it, the Buffalo Bills beat reporter had tried to trade up to get I think it was Roma Dunze. And in that situation, you go, okay, well, that kind of landing spot would be so good that, yes, I'd do that. But, yeah, I mean, my next pick of 106 will be Roma Dunze. What I really like about him, and it sounds insignificant, but he did everything apart from the bench press at the Combine. You had Marvin Harrison Jr., who didn't do anything, didn't even turn up to his interview. Malik Nabers, who didn't weigh in, didn't do a bunch of stuff. But I think the NFL teams are really going to love the fact that Roma Dunze went out there, competed, and I think it was good for him. You know, he's a player who did 4 years in college because the first year was the COVID year in 2020 and he only played 3 games. But he's just such a really impressive route runner, much like Malik Nabers, just absolutely electric when he's got the ball in his hands. And I think that he is going to be the kind of player that an offensive coordinator is just going to be giddy on draft day, knowing all the things that they can scheme up and all the ways they can get him the ball.
Yeah, we kind of mentioned this guy's name earlier. He gives me a bit of key, like a sort of, I think he might be slightly bigger, but Keenan Allen, like whenever I watch him running routes, like the technician side of him, I see a bit of Keenan Allen there, what Roma didn't say.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and anytime you get a chance to draw on the kind of fantasy gold that Keenan Allen's given us over the years. Like if Roma Dunze had that kind of career and you get him at 106, sign me up.
Absolutely delighted with the man. Here's an interesting question, Tom. We've got 6 players off the board. What are the odds these are the first 6 players off the NFL draft?
Oh, I like that. I think it's going to be very close. I think obviously the question really comes out of JJ McCarthy, which is a huge pivot point in this draft. Yeah. And what the Vikings do, how high they're able to trade up. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if this is the 6 that we see, or this and JJ McCarthy, who would be my pick at 107. Yeah. Like if these end up being the top 7, absolutely. And then you start looking at, I think, is it the Falcons at 108 and then the Titans at 109 or so around that?
Yeah.
No, Bears are at 9. But yeah, either way, these are the names who everybody's becoming very familiar with. And JJ McCarthy, when I first kind of started looking at him back in like February, for me, I didn't really see it in a way. He didn't really jump off the page. You know, he gained weight for the combine and weighed in at 219, and he looked like he carried it well. It wasn't like, you know, but when you go back and watch him in tape or you look at pictures of him in college, he was quite slight. I can't imagine an NFL team is going to let him lose that weight now that he's put it on. But the one thing that you kind of come back to with JJ McCarthy is that he just feels like a perfect Shanahan system type quarterback. And if Minnesota are coming up to get him, that feels like an ideal fit. You know, he reads plays both before and after the snap, gets the ball out on time. We know that's the kind of quarterback which NFL coaches really like. And while I feel like he is a very system player, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Like I heard somebody compare him to Derek Carr's statistical comp at one point, and I was like, you know what? There's a lot of stigma that comes with being compared to Derek Carr. But if you can get somebody who's going to finish as QB 12 to 15 each season in Superflex, there's a lot of value in that. There's a lot of value in that to an NFL team. And while we have seen some quarterbacks who end up getting paired with like elite talent wide receivers and not manage to deliver, you know, like players like Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't think that what we're looking at with JJ McCarthy is necessarily that. I think he can be the kind of player who, yeah, the ceiling games don't necessarily come all the time, but if Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison are dragging him to 300 yards and 3 touchdowns, then he's going to do enough to be a very solid QB2 for you in Superflex.
Yeah, that last line in particular, super solid QB2 in Superflex. I think that's right where JJ McCarthy's going to live if he ends up, you know, being the talent that we've seen snippets out of Michigan. They didn't allow him to do too much, but when he was given the ball, he was impressive. Like, can't really say too much, and I can't really knock him for, like, I think some people are trying to knock him like, oh, he didn't show enough. It's like, he should, but he could. Like, every time he got the ball, he looked good. He won games as well. Like, how much does that... That's an interesting one, actually, Tom. How much do you factor in that? Like, these players are just seem to be, like, winners, right? Because obviously last year, Stetson Bennett didn't really matter that he won the national championship. Wasn't really the talent. Do you weigh that in at all for JJ McCarthy?
No, not particularly. I think it's the kind of thing that it's an added bonus. You know, you want QBs who understand what it's like to be part of a winning regime in some level, whether that's, you know, in college or high school or something you want them to be. But like Lamar Jackson's talked about the fact that when he was in high school, he never won a trophy. When he was in college, he never won a trophy. You know, he won the Heisman, but he didn't win any of the kind of team accolades. So I think there's something to it, but it's kind of one of those things that NFL teams just look at and go, oh, yeah, appreciate that, you know, and stuff. But I think it's much more about if they were in a – how they are in the locker room probably counts a lot more than that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I tend to agree there for sure. Absolutely. So JJ McCarthy, he's locked in at pick number 7. Who's following up? So far, we've only got quarterbacks and wide receivers off the board. Are you sticking with that trend or are you going elsewhere?
Yeah, we're going to stick with it and go with Xavier Worthy. And it's not just about the fact that he's kind of lightning fast, but he's dealt with quite a strange college career. You know, he's had change of schemes, things like that. He went from being a deep threat to being used in lots of screen passes. And that versatility is impressive. He broke out as a true freshman with 27.4% targets per route run, had almost 1,000 yards. So anytime someone compares him to, like, your John Ross, it just falls apart straight away just because they're fast. You can't. They're such different players. And it's 165 pounds. There are going to be things that he can't do in the NFL. I mean, I know we've seen Devonta Smith succeed, but I think these are two quite different players in their approach. The main thing for me is seeing him land with a creative head coach, a creative offensive coordinator, someone who can scheme out the best of him. And it seems quite likely at the minute that he's going to end in the back of round one, somewhere between sort of picks 27 to 35. I think if he doesn't go in round one, I know you want your Chiefs to take him. I know if he goes in round two, it's very hard to imagine him getting past the Panthers at 33 and definitely not past the Panthers at 38.
Yeah, he's just someone I just can't wait. And what I do like now is, years gone by, people would have been like, Xavier Worthy, I'm not drafting him because of his size, because of his weight. And thankfully, that's kind of not been too much of a discussion this year, because we've seen so many of these guys come in and succeed, like even just like Tank Dell last year, for example, right? Tank Dell, who, by the way, last year, Tom, you were the first guy to bring up Tank Dell on the Dynasty Hot Seat. So shout out to you for that.
Well, I mean, I won't profess to be like the greatest person when it comes to having in-depth knowledge of rookies, but at certain players, I'm just not going to worry myself about the weight and stuff when there's other tangibles that stand out. And Xavier Worthy has the kind of tangibles that are worth taking a shot on. You know, I wouldn't ever take Xavier Worthy in the first 6 picks, even if this was a poor wide receiver class. That's not the kind of gamble I'd take. But here, like 107, 108, 109, completely fine with it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think he's a great value pick there. And just, I'm looking forward to see what he does in the NFL. He's just going to be, yeah, you're right. Plus a creative mind, Xavier Worthy, he's going to be a real weapon for an NFL team. So I think he's great value there, pick 8. And you got 4 picks left to round number 1. Who's pick number 9 for you, Tom?
So we'll go with Brock Bowers. And I'm quite up in the air on Brock Bowers. You go back to, I know you've been doing these since sort of like January. I think you came on our channel back in January. Mm-hmm. And back then, Brock Bowers was kind of being talked about as a top 5 pick. Yeah. And, you know, it's not just about the Kyle Pitts factor. Like, for me, I've never been burned by Kyle Pitts because I never drafted any Kyle Pitts. And part of that is I just don't like overinflating tight ends. We know that it's going to be really difficult in their rookie season. Even with them becoming more pass catchers coming out of college, and we're seeing it in players like Sam Laporta. But Bowers, I mean, he produced at a really good level. But we've seen first at round tight ends be such a minefield. It's not just Kyle Pitts, OJ Howard, Hayden Hurst, Evan Ingram, David Njoku. Like, even Evan Ingram and David Njoku, it took them years to develop into really good fantasy assets. Like, these aren't players who came in, you know, yes, Evan Ingram had one good season to start his career, but then it took getting away from stuff.
Yeah.
Tight end is such a landing spot dependent position, way more so than any other position, I think. And if he goes to a team that already has a tight end, then I think it's going to be a struggle for him because, I mean, we've seen the pictures. He's not going to be doing a huge amount of blocking. And we don't want tight ends to be excellent at blocking, or they end up a bit like George Kittle and they do a little too much of it at times. But we want somebody who stays on the field and isn't taken off consistently. So, you know, you need to be in that kind of build similar to Mark Andrews, Travis Kelce, where it's like you can hold your own when you've got edge rushers coming at you, but then you can chip and get out in the space. And I'm just not sure I see it with Brock Bowers, because when I look at him and I look at the way he plays, I think he might have been a matchup nightmare in college, but against good NFL defenses, I mean, I wouldn't have any qualms if Kyle Hamilton was covering Brock Bowers. I don't think that Brock Bowers is going to be doing much that day.
Yeah, Brock Bowers is someone who's also slid down. You're right, you mentioned that he was about five, and this is tending to be where I see him end up going around this 8-9 slot now. I think something to take into account is the tight end position, even though these guys come in and like done a little bit better, is historically like more widespread than before. Like, there's a lot of players that people are liking to take a tight end, but actually, you look at the top end numbers, not that great. Sam LaPorta last year finished his tight end number one. That was about the wide receiver 14, 15 mark, whereas before we've seen Travis Kelce would have been the wide receiver 3, would have been the wide receiver 4. We haven't seen that really for a couple of years now.
Yeah, so for me, it's also like, it comes back to, even if I was going to put a pick here, and I'm taking Brock Bowers because I don't think he's going to slide much further than this in drafts. Mm. But the approach I would prefer to take is, like, so you could value this pick at a similar range to Mark Andrews, Kyle Pitts, Dalton Kincaid, George Kittle, TJ Hockenson, Travis Kelce, even David Njoku plus a little extra something. And if I need a tight end to come in and play, I think I would be more tempted to trade this pick and let somebody else roll the dice on what's been an incredibly tricky position to get right over the years.
Yeah, I don't hate that move at all. Just moving back a little bit, getting some extra value and not really seeing too much difference on a points per game differential, definitely. So, yeah, I really like that move and buy into the hype of Brock Bowers. Certainly someone's going to bite on that for sure. So who's following up Brock Bowers in it? At pick number 10.
So I'm not necessarily going with players that I think should be going here. I'm going with what I think is actually going to happen here. And I think we are going to see people take round one running backs, and particularly at this end of the draft, when you've got teams who were close to making the playoffs, who have contending teams, contending rosters. So let's go with Jonathan Brooks. I know that the torn ACL is a bit of an issue. We don't see too many running backs come back and have fantastic seasons. The one thing is, Jonathan Brooks, his ACL tear, I believe it was a clean tear, which is much more similar to Breece Hall than your J.K. Dobbins or, you know, any other number of these running backs who've come back really slow and had issues with it. But think, when you look at Jonathan Brooks, he averaged over 6 yards per attempt every year at Texas. As a pass catcher, he didn't really flash anything too elite, but he's solid. He can catch the ball. He can work from it. He's not going to give you kind of like, you know, Saquon Barkley rookie year type runs, but we don't necessarily need that. I think that the obvious connection seems to be with, is it the Dallas Cowboys, where their team doctor was involved in his ACL surgery. So they seem very high on him. And the Cowboys are a team that are crying out for a running back. Like, I was going through today, putting together depth charts on all the teams and looking at their ADP for redraft and best ball. And the Dallas Cowboys, there's a lot of spaces on it. And if Jonathan Brooks was to land somewhere like that or the Chargers, then I think you can nail in that he won't just be creeping into round one at the 112. He'll be a couple of spots closer this area at round 10, at pick 10.
Yeah, I think Jonathan Brooks, for me, again, he's maybe the victim of this prospect fatigue or people kind of pushing up other people left and right, like after the combine and things like that. For me, Jonathan Brooks was the best running back in this class even before Trevion Henderson decided not to come in. I thought he was above Trevion Henderson. I still think he's the best running back in the class. I've got no real reason to change that. The ACL injury doesn't bother me because, I think I've said it on here before, your favorite running back probably also got an ACL injury, unless it's Tajay Spears, who doesn't have one. But apart from him, I think the rest of them have had an ACL injury or will have somewhere along the line. So it's not the death sentence it used to be, Tom, right?
No, I mean, it's those ones when it's the ACL, MCL, PCL, those kind of injuries, you know, that's what's going to be an issue because you've got scar tissue, you've got real chance that it's going to linger. But the clean ones, and that was always the argument on Breece Hall for last year and why I was quite heavy on him in best ball and that, because it was clean and he had enough time to recover.
Yeah, absolutely. And he slightly off topic, you mentioned my poor guy J.K. Dobbins there. Obviously Ravens side. What's going on with J.K. Dobbins? Any news from the Ravens side?
So there was talk that the Ravens would have liked him back, but obviously it's going to be a one-year prove-it deal for him. Yeah. And, you know, that's just the way it is. It's not going to be a lot of money. And I think after a few years in Baltimore, he's definitely open to a change of place just to see if his fortunes change anywhere else. But I wouldn't be surprised if he does end up back there. You know, Keaton Mitchell isn't going to be playing anytime too soon this season. Yeah. And then you look at kind of a lot of running back rooms filled up quicker than expected. Dobbins is obviously recovering from his torn Achilles. Yes, he's running, but he's got a long way to come back. So yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if Dobbins hangs out on the free agent market till post-draft and then teams start bringing him in for workouts.
Yeah, hopefully he just gets a chance. I just feel that guy just hasn't had a first shake of it yet. So I'm hoping to see him in a uniform somewhere. That'll be great. So Jonathan Brooks, he's the first running back off the board for you, Tom. Who's following up with the penultimate pick of the first round?
We'll go Brian Thomas Jr. Kind of really opened some eyes at the combine with his 4.33 40-yard dash at 209 pounds. Definitely got elite traits. Really good deep threat. You know, you look at his A-dot last year of 13.9, which tells you everything you need to know. You know, he had 17 touchdowns, 1,177 yards. The one knock on him is he's not incredible at running routes when you need to cut, when you need to do something, you know, where it's a bit, he's never going to give you those kind of Hunter Renfro, Cooper Kupp type routes where he stops on a dime and really changes direction. But at the same time, the NFL teams seem to really like him. I think there's a path where he could be the third wide receiver taken off the board in the actual NFL draft. And there's plenty of good landing spots for him. So I think he might not give you the completely full-rounded package that we'd like from a wide receiver early on in fantasy, but I think he can develop into an excellent pro.
I just see he's someone who, the more I kind of watch, the more I listen to what all the people are saying about him, he's slowly creeping up my rankings here. I just think, just with the size and the speed and like the tape is where you're right. He's not quite super nuanced yet, but I did like what I seen in the red zone with him as well. It's like, okay, you can take little pieces and like mold them and sculpt them. There's a real, real dangerous receiver there. So I love taking a shot at someone like a Brian Thomas Jr. at the back end of the first round where your teams are already pretty good anyway. So if you hit on Brian Thomas, you are laughing at the rest of the league for sure. So I love him at the back end of the first. But who's at the very back end of the first for you, Tom? I pick 112.
So let's take another running back. I know in a lot of these mocks, we only see one running back creep in, but it's going to happen. You are going to be in drafts where people in your league, they want a running back, they see the opportunity. And Trey Benson, at 6 foot, 216 pounds. Last year, there was a lot of these kind of smaller running backs around, like the kind of 200-pound mark, 190, 180, and there were question marks. Trey Benson is much more of a kind of typical all-round running back who teams are really going to like. I think, you know, you look at his production out of Florida State with 14 touchdowns, 900 yards last year. Maybe he's just fancy Gus Edwards, but a lot of teams like that kind of player, and I think he'll do well.
Yeah, I've seen a bit more of like a nuance. People sort of label Benson with this sort of like complete hammer role, which, you know, he could definitely do. I've seen a bit of this, a bit of that out of it. I'll see Gus Edwards catch a ball and run 80 yards to the house this season. So I suppose he could do that too. So let's not put too much slant on Gus. But I think Benson's got enough juice in different areas that he can be, like I said, that all-round back that can come in and do a good job. He's someone I think that just fits the mold of where we're heading in the NFL right now, which is every team's got a 1A and a 1B, and he's perfectly capable of being that. So he's great to get in round number one at the back end. Tom, we're going to mix it up a bit, though, for round two. We're going to go through three players, and then we're going to focus on one, and you're going to tell me, or we're going to guess maybe perhaps, Tom, to get even more fun, who has the highest ADP going in best ball right now, right?
Yep. Yeah, we can make that work.
That sounds very fun to me. So let's go with your first three players in at 2-1, 2-2, and 2-3.
Troy Franklin, Michael Penix, Keon Coleman.
Oh, that is interesting. So all three of these guys really have quite a lot of upside. So let's preface the first. How much difference do you see in the rankings for best ball versus the rankings for dynasty, just in a general kind of way, Tom?
So by the time you get down to the second round of dynasty drafts, it's rare that you're talking about any player inside the top 100. I mean, maybe these are the kind of players who you look back at a Sky Moore, and if the rookie hype catches, then they can get jumped all the way up in redraft to a point where they get overdrafted. But yeah, typically these are players in from sort of pick 100 through undrafted, and there's opportunity there. Like I was chatting with somebody today about the fact that there are league winners in this area of the draft, and it's just finding them. You know, not every player is going to turn into a Puka Nacua, but this time last year, nobody was talking about Puka Nacua. You go back, nobody was talking about Tank Dell. And so it becomes very difficult.
Apart from Tom Strachan, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, you know, I happen to be partnered with a very smart guy who's quite in on Tank Dell as well. But yeah, so definitely we see some kind of variance with it. But I think also there's points where people just aren't too sure what to do with them in best ball. So there's quite a lot of variance.
Yeah, it's real interesting. I'm awful at best ball. I'm just going to tell you, I'm so bad. I need to pick your brain about it maybe sometime off air, Tom, because I need some help.
Well, Max, head over to the Fantasy Sanctuary YouTube channel, and I just put a video out a couple of days ago called 5 Tips to Dominate Best Ball Draft Strategy, and that'll get you set up on the right track.
Absolutely. What a great plug that was, Tom. That's so professional. Absolutely love that. So, right. Who's your guess between these three? Who's got the highest best ball ADP there? Because they must be quite close because they've all got really, really great upside.
Yeah, so Michael Penix won't be getting drafted in best ball unless he landed with Vikings or something like that. There's no chance that he's going to be drafted. So it really kind of comes down to Franklin and Coleman. I think it's going to be Franklin because Franklin's that kind of burner player. You know, he wasn't as fast as we hoped at the combine, but, you know, you go back and watch him, and he was just a real highlight, real player. Whereas Keon Coleman, there's not been much positive about him in recent weeks. I feel like he's probably slipping because of that.
I think you're quite right. I would say Troy Franklin would be the guy that's got the best ADP there for those three.
So Troy Franklin is at 111, and Keon Coleman is at 129.
Nice. We absolutely nailed that. And it's funny you mentioned about, Franklin's 40 time not being quite what it was. I don't know if you've seen him catching some stray bullets on X currently, because I've said that 4.5 is not a fast 40 time, and all these Welsh rugby fans, they're still not over wooden the wooden spoon. They're coming at me from, and I don't know what to tell them. It's not that fast, right?
I mean, yeah, and it's not that fast. And also, if you're not going to run a 40 fast, then you need to be really good at all the other drills. And the simple fact is, you can be an excellent rugby player, but you can't just walk in and becoming a great NFL player straight away. And it just showed what the international pathway really is.
Yeah, yeah, he's got a long way to go, but you know, it'd be a nice story if he found the field eventually. That'd be quite nice for Lewis Rees-Savvy. Hey, maybe someone will draft him in the fourth round in the hot seat at some stage. You never know. He might get his way onto Sleeper someday soon. That'd be great for him. So you got our next three guys coming up then after Coleman. Who's your next three at 2, 4, 5, and 6?
Yeah, so I think you kind of have to look at Bo Nix, particularly in Superflex. Yes, he's very experienced, but I think he'll land somewhere as a backup. Blake Corum, I think there's plenty to like about him. Really good vision and acceleration. Everyone's plugging him straight to the Chargers, I think it is. And then Bucky Irving as well, who, again, fast, explosive, and could be really fun.
Yeah, Bucky Irving, he really slid after the combine, where again he didn't run a 40 time that people thought he would. But for me, I've seen enough of him on the field. I know he's not slow, so I'm not really too bothered about the 40 time I've seen of him. We've seen plenty of players run slow 40 times who, you know, we don't consider slow players, so I'm not too worried about that with Bucky Irving. Oh, who would be going? My guess would be Blake Corum. Tom, who are you thinking?
Yeah, it's Blake Corum, and it's just because everybody's plugging in that kind of connection to the Chargers. Yeah. Everyone's assuming that he's going to be playing alongside Gus Edwards, and he'll have a huge opportunity. So Corum's going at pick 128, and Bucky Irving's going at pick 177, so kind of like on the fringes of the end of the draft.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bo Nix, I've asked a couple of people about this. Now, he might not even get to this stage just with his draft capital. But if I close my eyes, I can see Bo Nix sitting in the green room with the janitors sweeping up everything, and he's just waiting to be drafted, but no one's coming calling.
Yeah, yeah, a bit Will Levis-esque last year, where it just got a little bit sad and the coverage just feels a bit painful. But yeah, Bo Nix, I mean, you're talking about a wide range of outcomes. Fringe round one, if a team really loves him, all the way down to like round three, round four, we do see these quarterback slides.
Yeah, I think he's going to be more the latter. I think he's a great, great college quarterback. Just don't see how I'm not going to own a single Bo Nix shirt, put it that way, because I don't see how he's going to help my team. So I'm happy to let other people draft him here, because I'm just like, yeah, I just don't see how he would help any of my teams out. So he's in there, and Blake Corum, the highest ADP in baseball for those. So who's coming up next at 7, 8, and 9 for you, Tom?
So let's go Devontae Tez Walker.
Nice.
And then we'll go Braylon Allen, who I think NFL teams are really going to like for kind of all the reasons we talked about with some of the other guys. Then AD Mitchell, who... Yep. Again, is creeping up real NFL draft boards. Yeah. And I think if he landed with a team like your Chiefs or a back end round one team, then perhaps he's really going to climb up best ball ADP. And I think he'll climb up real dynasty ADP as well. I think, you know, he could easily jump Devontae Walker and Keon Coleman with the right landing spot.
Yeah, this is for me, I'm ruling out Tez Walker. And I think it's a fight between the other two. Who's your instinct leaning towards, Tom?
I think AD Mitchell feels like he's been the player picking up a lot of hype. Let me see. So we've got Braylon Allen. Okay, so Devontae Walker is at pick 191. Braylon Allen, 154. And AD Mitchell, pick 101. So yeah, he's really picking up. He's jumped quite a bit in the last couple of weeks since I last looked.
Is that even him ahead of Troy Franklin then? Was Franklin at 111 or something?
Yeah, so in terms of ADP, he's ahead of Xavier Worthy. He's ahead of Troy Franklin. he's really up there.
Wow, good for Eddie. I mean, he is he's one of those guys, like, he's just like, puts, if you put it all together, he is scary. He's a lot faster than people thought he was going to be, for sure. So yeah, but ahead of Worthy, that's too rich for me. Even that, would you do that in best ball, Tom? Is that a kind of player that really flips over because of the best ball side of it, or do you think it's just too much to take him ahead of a guy like Worthy?
I think I'd probably have a bit of exposure to both, but I don't really love either of their ADP without knowing the landing spot, to be honest. I mean, it's always a bit of a minefield drafting pre-draft, but yeah, I don't think I'd be heavy on either player at that cost.
Yeah, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention your co-host as well, who always says there's no correlation between size and speed for these wide receivers. So maybe just pump the brakes a little bit on Eddie Mitchell if you're flying him off the board because of that. So who are your last three guys in round one or round two then? Sorry, Tom.
So let's go Ladd McConkey. I did think when people started talking him up and he was kind of Twitter's favorite player for a few days, I thought he must have done a lot more than 483 yards and two touchdowns in his last year. But he definitely feels like a juiced up Hunter Renfro. We've got Benson up with the second tight end. I think he's going to be the type of tight end who NFL teams really like because he's a big physical player. Rumor grows a receiver, but you know, he's not a zero. And then Malachi Corley, because he's just such an explosive athlete who really is a lot of fun. I think it was Pat Fitzmaurice, Fantasy Pros, who came on our channel and first talked him up way back in like early February and really got me and Rich onto him. And he's a lot of fun to look at.
Yeah, Corley's good fun. He's a guy that, just for whatever reason, watching college football this year, never really came up my radar just because his team just kind of hard to find games of theirs to watch, really. So it never really got too much of a chance to watch him. So it's been nice, like, looking through the archives and trying to see as much Corley as I can. This one's easy for me, Tom. I don't know if it's easy for you. I think it's Ladd McConkey with a bullet. Has to be.
Yeah, Ladd McConkey at 122, Malachi Corley at 182, and then Ben Snott's going to get... not going to get drafted unless he really lands anywhere fun. But I think that's kind of fine for Dynasty. So, yeah, I think it just makes sense, those two.
Yeah, I think, yeah, Ladd McConkey is really all over the place in terms of where he's been drafted. I've seen, you know, people take him in the first round. I've seen people talk about how they wouldn't touch him till the third round. And then most of the time, he does end up in the second. So I think that's probably where we'll see Ladd McConkey go, unless you're right, he gets one of those dream landing spots, then people do tend to get bumped up or down depending on where they go. But Tom, before we go, I can't go without everyone's favorite talking point. It's the sleepers. Everyone loves these. Since Puka Nacua especially, people love these sleepers. So do you have any players you think that are going under the radar or someone you think deserves a bit more shine in them?
I find myself really being in on Roman Wilson out of Michigan. Oh, yeah. Had 12 touchdowns, really lit up the Senior Bowl to the point where he was singled out multiple times for praise, which always feels fairly noteworthy. And obviously coming out of Michigan, we know it wasn't a pass-heavy scheme, but you go back and you watch any kind of Michigan games, and it just seemed like Roman Wilson was catching touchdowns, catching big plays. Yeah. He had 48 catches for 789 yards. So definitely not like the world on fire stuff. But he's a really enjoyable player to watch. I think that he's got a reasonable floor. And I think he's going to step into the NFL and get on the field very early because he can do plenty. And because he just has the feel of a kind of hardworking player that is going to earn his snaps very quickly.
Yeah, I put a tweet about Roman Wilson a couple of months ago, just while the college season was going on. And it was kind of like his measurables aren't going to jump off the page, aren't going to explode. I nearly jumped out of my seat whenever he said he was going to run a 4.2 at the combine. It's like, there's literally zero chance you're going to do that. It's because I like watch this team. Like, he ended up with like a 4.4 or something, which is quite
4.39, yeah.
4.3, yeah. Like, but I was really questioning who I was watching when he said he was going to run a 4.2, but yeah, I don't think anything jumps off the field for him, but you're right. Super solid guy. He's going to come in. I can kind of see him coming in as a wide receiver 3 for a team and slowly sort of edging his way up, creeping his way up because, I mean, JJ McCarthy didn't get to throw the ball a lot, but when he did, he looked for Roman Wilson nearly every time, which seems to be a good sign, I think. So I like that you're shining some light on Roman Wilson for sure.
Well, let's get Roman Wilson to the LA Chargers and see what happens.
Oh, love that. I mean, again, there's no one else. Hayden Hurst is wide receiver one there at the minute. So I think he'll do great there for sure. And hey, let's get Wilson, let's get Corum in, anyone else from Michigan, let's get the whole crew on and get the whole band together, right?
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tom, that brings us to the end of the show. I just want to say thank you so much once again for coming on to the Dynasty Odyssey. Can you please remind everyone where can they find all your amazing work online?
Yeah, you can find it at the Fantasy Sanctuary on YouTube. We've got so much content there. I'm ramping up best ball strategy videos at the minute. Rich is doing all the Ricky profile preview videos. Got Dynasty Buys video out this week. Never been a better time to be a subscriber to the Fantasy Sanctuary. And yeah, just want to say thank you, Mags. You know, we think the world of you. Always enjoy chatting to you, and it's always a lot of fun being on the hot seat.
Thank you very much, mate. That was very, very kind. And thank you as well to everybody listening. Hey, if you've not already, getting that like, getting that subscribe, all that great stuff that goes a long way. So, Tom, once again, thank you so much. Once again, thank you, everybody, for listening. Remember, if anything Dynasty you need to know, keep it locked on the Certified Inferno. And we'll see you next time.